and welcome to the SNC-Lavalin Third Quarter 2014 Earnings Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Dennis Jasmine. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to SNC-Lavalin 2014 Third Quarter Earnings Conference Call. With us today are Robert Card, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Alain-Pierre Renaud, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. As you read this morning, we announced our third quarter results and actions to align operations with our growth strategy and end market economics. We have posted our third quarter results slide presentation on our website, which we will refer to during our call. Before we begin, I would like to ask everyone to limit themselves to two or three questions to ensure that all analysts have an opportunity to participate. You are welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. Media are invited to listen to this portion of the conference. After the question period with analysts, Libby Nguyen, Public Relations Manager, Global Corporate Communication, and Eric Ryan, Executive Vice President, Marketing Strategy and External Relations, will join the call to facilitate a question period of 30 minutes between Robert Card and media about the announcement made earlier today regarding SNC-Lavalin's restructuring and right-sizing plan. Before we start, let me remind you that, as detailed on slide 3, certain statements or comments made during today's call and slide presentation may be forward-looking. Such statements or comments represent management's best judgment and expectations as of today's date and are subject to certain risks, uncertainties, and assumptions which are described in our financial documents and cannot be guaranteed. I would now like to turn the conference over to Robert Card.
Merci, Denis, and thank you all for joining us today. Over the course of the year, SNC-Lavalin has achieved several significant milestones under our plan to become a global Tier 1 engineering and construction firm. Chief among these accomplishments was the closing of our landmark acquisition of Kentz. With just 5 weeks of financials included in this quarter's results, its impressive performance underscores the strategic benefits of the partnership and the advantages of our significantly expanded oil and gas capabilities. We're also really happy with how the integration is progressing. We have a joint integration team in place led by Neil Bruce, President REW, and Chris Brown, former Kent CEO and now President Oil and Gas at SNC-Lavalin. We held an integration kickoff meeting in Houston recently and are thrilled with how our teams are already collaborating on joint opportunities. The business continues to deliver seamlessly, and we expect the integration to be fully completed by December 31 of this year. With this acquisition successfully completed, we are now preparing for the next phase of our strategic plan to build the platform for secure future economic growth consistent with our announced strategy. Elements key to our thinking include the following: the potential sale of our stake in Highway 407 and the use of proceeds, our structure in light of our value-up program and the Kentz acquisition, the assessment of remaining risks embedded in certain challenging projects, legacy acquisitions, and receivables, and changes in the global economic outlook, which appear negatively stable over at least the midterm, and their effect on our end markets and resource positioning. In such a competitive economy, companies must be agile and rapidly adapt their strategy and actions to the needs of their clients and markets. Our global reorganization and value-up initiatives are producing results, but we decided that further action is required to align our expertise and internal resources with our most promising opportunities. We'll further improve our agility and client focus by taking action to right-size our operations. Over the next 18 months, we plan to scale back certain underperforming activities and adjust, consolidate, and streamline some of our operations and corporate structure throughout the company. These actions, which are expected to result in $200 million in charges over that time period, aim to deliver over $100 million in annual operational efficiencies beginning in 2015 and require a reduction of about 9% of our global workforce. We also expect to record approximately $100 million in non-cash charges over this time. Accordingly, we've revised our EPS outlook for 2014 to a range of 40 to 45 cents to reflect these actions, the acquisition of Kentz and all related costs, as well as continued end market challenges. These actions will enhance our client service and improve our efficiency, effectiveness, and competitive positioning as we continue to execute on the other elements of our strategic plan. While risks remain with certain legacy projects, we are encouraged with the development of our ongoing project bid and review process, project delivery improvements, and the development of an enhanced marketing and sales process to counter the work decline due to increased bid selectivity and economic factors. In this context, we were pleased with a recent recognition we received for project management excellence from the Association of Consulting Engineering Companies for the Ambitovi Mine in Madagascar, and the Project of the Year Award from the Project Management Institute for Rio Tinto Alcan's AP60 project. As we enter the next phase of our plan, our team will be better positioned to compete for and win significant projects that are, of course, aligned with our more rigorous risk management standards. To name just a few recent wins, we were awarded a 5-year contract to deliver integrated real estate solution projects on behalf of Infrastructure Ontario and its 26 ministry clients. We won the Balance of Plant Engineering Procurement and Construction contract for the St. Charles Energy Center project in Maryland, and we won a contract to provide district cooling facilities for an entertainment resort in Dubai. While we expand our platform for accelerated growth, we're leveraging our ICI assets to build value for our E&C business. We demonstrated this with the sale of our stake in the Montreal Symphony Hall announced last month, the recently completed sale of our interest in Astoria 1 power plant, and, of course, the agreement to sell our stake in AltaLink, which we announced in May. The sale process remains on track, and a closing by the end of this year is still anticipated. With regard to ethics and compliance, we continue to make progress on our ambition to become a global benchmark. David Wilkins, our Chief Compliance Officer, has been overseeing our global compliance organization, which is now fully ramped up and positively affecting internal controls throughout the company. We have now completed implementation of our business partner due diligence program. Our internal reporting and investigation process continues to work well with both good employee engagement and reporting and a strong and responsive investigation team. We're committed to continuing to improve our program's ability to prevent, detect, and respond to ethics and compliance risks, which will lead to recognized ethics excellence. We're also making good progress in safety excellence as well, recording a company-wide lost workday free month in the quarter and overall safety performance statistics competitive with the top tier of the industry. In summary, we're building a company to achieve our growth objectives and compete on a global scale. We're excited about our 5-year vision to transform into a global Tier 1 E&C firm and believe we have the right plan in place to achieve it. Now, turning to third quarter results. Before Len Pierre discusses the numbers in detail, I would like to provide a summary of the quarter. We were pleased to report net earnings this year as compared to a net loss in Q3 2013, but remained frustrated by the performance headwinds from legacy projects and continued softness in commodity markets. Earnings for the third quarter were $69 million, or 45 cents per diluted share, as compared to a loss of $73 million in 2013. The company reported in the quarter a net loss from E&C of $20 million compared to a net loss of $128 million for the third quarter of 2013. If we exclude the extraordinary items such as acquisition and integration costs, restructuring costs, and goodwill impairment, third quarter 2014 net income from E&C was $29 million versus a comparable net loss of $66 million in 2013 and improvement of $95 million quarter over quarter. As just mentioned, earnings continue to be impacted by profitability headwinds from several legacy fixed-price projects, and we believe we'll face end-market challenges throughout the remainder of 2014. ICI continued to perform well with a net income in the quarter of $89 million compared to $56 million in the third quarter of 2013. SG&A expenses were $204 million. Excluding the Kent acquisition and ICI expenses, E&C expenses were in line with Q3 2013. Again, excluding Kent's, we expect this line item decrease as a result of our restructuring and right-sizing plans, system enhancements, and our value-up program. Revenues were $2 billion, in line with Q3 2013, as the incremental services revenues from Kent's and increased revenues in ICI were offset by lower contributions from packages. This is in line with our goal of having a more services-centric project delivery model. Our backlog has increased more than 50% since the beginning of the year to $12.5 billion, which reflects the addition of the Kent's backlog. Our legacy projects now represent $500 million of this backlog, a 17% decrease from the prior quarter. While risk and backlog are not directly correlated, challenging legacy projects now represent just 4% of our total. Our cash position was a comfortable $1.1 billion for the quarter. Moving now to our segment results, starting with our Resources, Environment, and Water segment. As I stated previously, we feel our oil and gas subsegment is going to be a driver of our future growth. The Kent's transaction has effectively transformed our oil and gas business, giving us upstream, unconventional LNG capabilities, while expanding our presence in key growth regions across the globe. We're now positioned to win higher margin complex projects for which we're able to offer a fully integrated solution from concept to maintenance. We expect that the transaction will be earnings accretive in 2015 and look forward to leveraging the many opportunities it represents. In that regard, we're pleased to be supporting Nexen Energy with the three-year master services agreement that we recently announced. As we stated, a difficult commodity environment continues to affect our mining and metallurgy subsegment. Let me reiterate, however, our commitment to retain and build on our Tier 1 position in this industry. While we think it will take some time for this market to recover, we've been encouraged by the stable demand in the fertilizer sector and positive price improvements in zinc. Additionally, we have a good pipeline that is somewhat insulated from market cyclicality due to our end-to-end offering of services across the full life cycle of projects. The environment and water subsegment continues to be challenging, and we have bolstered its management in 2014 to enhance our ability to deliver a positive contribution in the future. We're also focused on leveraging the significant synergies with other SNC-Lavalin business units. The power segment remains strong, and we're encouraged by out-year opportunities. We remain optimistic about nuclear as the development of major projects, particularly with our Chinese partners, continues to progress. Our delivery on key hydro projects remains on track, and we're pleased with the recent announcement for the Jimmy Creek plant in British Columbia. We also recently announced the appointment of Marie-Claude Dumas as our new global leader for hydro. We're seeing increased opportunities in our T&D market to replace the big build for AltaLink, and we recently announced our new global T&D leader, Pierre St. Arnaud. As noted last quarter, we've been selected on a number of thermal projects which are awaiting notice to proceed, and we are hopeful that these will advance. We're seeing a general pickup in the gas turbine market. Infrastructure and construction was negatively impacted due to a challenging legacy project. However, we see good prospects in this segment driven by the global demand for new infrastructure and the rehabilitation of existing infrastructure. The project prospect pipeline remains robust with billions of work still to be awarded over the next year. We're also pleased to welcome aboard our new global head of infrastructure construction, Ian Edwards. Operations and maintenance revenues slightly decreased from last year, but earnings were up as a result of efficiency improvements in project execution. Remain encouraged by the patterns we're seeing around a greater outsourcing of services and movement to a public-private partnership concession model in various markets. Finally, our ICI business continues to outperform. We expect increased contributions from ICI through the rest of the year. In conclusion, while near-term results remain below expectations, we've made good progress toward creating a platform to achieve our goal of being a global Tier 1 E&C firm. We remain committed to excellence in value creation, execution, ethics, compliance, and safety. With that, I'll pass the call over to Len Pierre to discuss our Q3 results and 2014 outlook in more detail. Len Pierre?
Thank you, Bob. Good afternoon, everyone. I will start my presentation on slide 6. As you can see, our gross margin, EBIT, and net income increased compared to last year, while revenues decreased. Let's look at this in more detail, starting at the top line. Revenues for the first 9 months ended September 30, 2014, were $5.4 billion compared to $5.8 billion for the same period last year. The decrease is mainly due to the AEW and power segments. The main reason for the decrease in AEW is the decrease in the mining and metallurgy subsegments, which continues to experience challenges from a continued softening of the commodity markets. The main reason for the power segment is a decrease in packages activity, mainly due to certain major projects nearing completion. The decrease was partially offset by increased revenue from ICI and incremental revenue from CAMS, which we acquired on August 22nd. The gross margin amount for the first 9 months of 2014 was $1.1 billion, compared to $718 million for the same period in 2013, reflecting higher gross margin amounts from E&C and ICI. The gross margin percentage stood at 21% in 2014, compared to 12% in 2013. The gross margin amount from E&C mainly reflect an increase in packages, partially offset by a decrease in services gross margin. Year-to-date 2014, packages gross margin include a net negative impact on gross margin of $13.1 million from the combination of another additional loss on a major hospital project and of a favorable outcome on certain claims. It also included an unfavorable cost reforecast on an unprofitable legacy fixed price contract in North Africa and additional reserves for a total amount of $23.6 million. On the other hand, the 2014 gross margin was positively impacted by the reversal in the first quarter of 2014 of a risk provision on a Libyan project that we had recorded in the second quarter of 2013. Note that the 2013 package's gross margin included unfavorable cost reforecast on certain unprofitable legacy fixed price contracts, particularly in the hospital, road sectors, and in North Africa, as well as non-cash losses and provision recorded on projects in Algeria and in Libya, partially offset by a favorable final outcome on a fixed price contract for a total net negative impact of $331.8 million. The gross margin amount from ICI mainly reflects a higher contribution from Altalink and the company ceasing to depreciate and amortize Altalink's non-current assets as of May 1, 2014, resulting from the classification of Altalink's assets and liabilities as held for sale at that date, as well as higher dividends received from IOF 07, partially offset by a lower contribution from STH. For the first 9 months of 2014, SG&A expenses decreased by 2% to $599.4 million after $18.3 million incremental expenses in the third quarter from CAMS. The decrease, $30.4 million without CAMS, is mainly attributable to cost savings resulting from the company's restructuring plans implemented in the second half of 2013 and the company's effort to contain this cost under its value-up program. The consolidated EBIT for the first 9 months of 2014, before restructuring costs, goodwill impairment, loss on disposal of an ICI, acquisition-related costs and integration costs, was $526.4 million, or 10% over our total revenues, compared to $107.1 million in 2013, or 2% over our total revenues. The EBIT from ICI was $429.5 million compared to $270.5 million in 2013. The increase was mainly due to higher contribution from Altalink and the company ceasing to depreciate and amortize Altalink non-current assets, as explained before, as well as higher dividends received from IOF 07, partially offset by a lower contribution from SKH. The EBIT from ENC was $21.1 million compared to a negative EBIT of $231.7 million in 2013. The positive variance in the ENC EBIT was mainly due to more efficient project risk control, triggering less unfavorable cost reforecast and provision in the first 9 months of 2014 compared to the corresponding period of 2013, as well as a contribution of $30.7 million from newly acquired CAMS. As part of the reorganization of our activities, intended to advance our strategic plan and to increase efficiency and competitiveness, the company incurred restructuring costs totaling $15.8 million in the 9 month period under September 30th. Last year, $68.2 million were incurred for the corresponding period, including $19.7 million of restructuring costs and $48.5 million of goodwill impairment. The restructuring costs recognized in the 9 month period ended September 30th were mainly for severances, while the restructuring costs recognized in the 9 month period ended September 30th, 2013, were mainly for the reorganization of the company's European activities, including the disposal and closure of certain number of offices. Net financial expenses increased to $187.7 million in the first 9 months of the year, compared to $110.2 million last year, representing a $77.5 million increase. $59.9 million of the increase was from ICI due to higher interest expense on additional non-recourse debt, mainly related to Autolink and Impower BC General Partnership. $17.7 million of the increase came from ENC and was mainly due to the cost of unsecured revolving credit agreement entered into in December 2013, and from cost of $12.5 million related to additional financing for the acquisition of CAMS. Now, turning to slide 7. As we can see from this slide, SG&A expenses from ENC excluding CAMS decreased to $167.8 million in the third quarter of 2014, compared to $191.4 million in the second quarter. If we compare third quarter 2014 to third quarter 2013, which was the quarter that we began our efforts to contain the G&A expenses, we can see that we have succeeded to stabilize our expenses and to decrease them over the last 9 months. The company continues on optimizing its organizational structure and reducing its cost. The company aims to continue implementing SG&A expenses reduction initiatives and realize potential SG&A expenses synergies following the CANS acquisition. Slide 8 now. Slide 8 presents EBIT by segment. As you can see, the ICI EBIT is contributing $429.5 million of the total EBIT. Power, mining and metallurgy, OEM and CANS are positively contributing and overcompensate for the negative contribution from oil and gas, environment and water, and infrastructure and constructions, which continue to be challenging. Note that CANS EBIT of $30.7 million only represents about 5 weeks, as the acquisition was completed on August 22, 2014. Slide 9 presents our revenue backlog by category of activity. Our revenue backlog totaled $12.5 billion at the end of September 2014 compared to $8.2 billion at the end of June 2014 and December 2013. The increase is mainly due to the services and packages revenue backlog, which grew considerably with the addition of CANS revenue backlog. As we can see now on slide 10, the challenging legacy project included in the company backlog totaled $500 million as at September 30, 2014, 4% only of our backlog, a 17% decrease from June 2014, and a 45% decrease from December 2013. We continue to expect that some of this will be completed by the end of 2014. We are glad to announce we have achieved substantial completion on the McGill Hospital project. For North African project, we now believe that our challenging legacy project will take slightly longer to complete than originally expected and forecast that they will only be completed in the first months of 2015 instead of December 2014. I also want to remind you again that most of these challenging legacy projects are running at zero margin. Therefore, we expect to continue to improve the gross margin backlog as we reduce the zero margin backlog related to these challenging projects. Slide 11, please. Slide 11 shows our financial position. We can see that our cash and cash equivalents totaled $1.1 billion as at September 30, 2014, in line with the end of December 2013. I also want to bring your attention to two lines. The first one is called Goodwill and Other Intangible Assets Recognized Following the Acquisition of CANS for $2.3 billion. The accounting for the business combination is expected to be completed as soon as management will have finalized the valuation at fair value market of CANS assets and liabilities in order to allocate the purchase price. The effects may be to transfer an amount to or from the assets acquired, liabilities assumed, and goodwill during such measurement period, which cannot exceed 1 year from the acquisition date. During that period, the company will retrospectively adjust the provisional amounts recognized as at the acquisition date to reflect new information obtained about facts and circumstances that existed and, if known, would have affected the measurement of the amounts recognized at the acquisition date. We aim to complete the allocation of the purchase price in the first half of 2015. This allocation will be considered as definitive in the third quarter of 2015. The second line I want to bring your attention to is the current portion of the recourse long-term debt for $2.6 billion. Please turn to slide 12. As you can see, the increase in the recourse short-term debt mainly reflects the use of funds to the purchase of CANS, the repayment of its debt, as well as the payment of the acquisition-related cost. On the date of acquisition, SNC-Lavalin was able to reduce the purchase price of CANS by $120 million with reduction in transaction costs, favorable exchange rates, and the use of a portion of CANS cash. Upon closing of the sale of Auto Link, a mandatory repayment will be made on the outstanding balance of the acquisition facility. Assuming the transaction closes in the fourth quarter of 2014, the company expects that an estimated $2.9 billion, representing proceeds from the sale of AltaLink, net of fiduciary income taxes payable and transaction costs, will be used for repayment of the $2.6 billion outstanding balance of the acquisition facility and repayment of the $350 million non-recourse debt related to the financing of the company's equity contribution in AltaLink Holding. If you can now turn to slide 13. As just mentioned, our cash and cash equivalent totaled $1.1 billion at the end of September 2014, in line with the end of December 30, 2013. As we can see, the EBITDA provided us with about $556 million. The net change in non-cash working capital items of negative $479 million is mainly due to a decrease in trade payables. The fund used for acquisition of property and equipment was mainly due to $1.1 billion from AltaLink, with a corresponding $1 billion increase in non-recourse long-term debt. Non-recourse long-term debt also increased by $290 million as the Empower BC concession issued senior bonds this year, while $236 million was paid for interest and income taxes, $110 million for dividends, and $193 million invested in deposit notes. Finally, you have the recourse debt increase and acquisition of Kent, which we already talked about. Cash contributed by Kent represents more than $270 million in our cash position as September 30th. Now, turning to slide 14. The company is revising its 2014 earnings per share guidance range. If we consider the acquisition of Kent, including acquisition-related costs, integration costs, and financing costs, and the charges from the actions announced earlier today, 2014 EPS is expected to be in the range of 40 cents to 55 cents. This guidance revision does not take into account the eventual gain on the sale of the company's interest in AltaLink. This concludes my part of the presentation. We can now open the line for questions. Thank you.
I remember this is the Q&A for the analyst only. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you have signal for a question prior to hearing these instructions on today's call, please repeat the process now by pressing star 1 to ensure equipment has captured your signal. I would like to ask any members of the media to refrain from queuing up for questions until instructed to do so. We'll now take our first question from Yuri Link at Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys.
Hi, Yuri.
Hi, Bob. So, Bob, I guess I'll ask the obvious question. A little bit more detail, please, on the restructuring and right-sizing. What exactly is coming out besides headcount from which segments? Sounds like mining, but if you could provide some color there and maybe expand a little bit on the regions.
Okay. First of all, mining is not the primary focus of this because I just wanted to make that clear that even though mining ripples through a lot of our businesses and our economies, we're committed to Tier 1 status and building on that in mining. So I would say let me just step back and say what we had in mind with this. As we looked at our strategy, and we looked at our resources, we said there are pockets, either due to the way the market has moved or the way we've moved, there are pockets of resources, including physical assets as well as human resources, that we just couldn't see a profitable role for over the mid to longer term. There's no short term in this restructuring. And it was based on that analysis that led us to these decisions. So we said in the press release that it's three quarters outside Canada, one quarter in Canada. There's no particular group. I would say for obvious reasons, the only group that is very little impacted is Kent's because they're rapidly growing at the current time. And, in fact, Kent's is absorbing former SNC-Lavalin employees, so it's providing a very valuable contribution. I think clearly developing economies, I mean, if for people, you know, sort of following global economics, the developing economies are having a struggle. Europe is having a struggle. And so if you, you know, go watch the Bank of Canada announcements and their assessment of the world, you can kind of plot out where it might be impactful for us. But we're not prepared yet to pin down exact locations. In terms of the timing, I don't know, Denis or Lynn-Pierre, did you want to say something about the timing of the restructuring?
Yeah, in the timing, let's say most of the restructuring and right-sizing will take place before year-end. Obviously, a minor portion of the execution will take place in the early months of 2015.
Yeah, our goal is to everything that we can deliver this year will be delivered. There are some legal and other constraints that were, make it not possible for us to do all of it.
So what does the 18 months refer to?
18 months is just the process time. If you take the longest lead time we need, some locations have very challenging processes to complete a restructuring action. And so that's the longest pole in the tent. That's actually quite a small portion of the overall effort. In fact, you know, very small. But, yeah, so I apologize. 18 months is a bit misleading, but we had to put it in because that is the maximum time. But the vast majority will be done very soon.
And will the savings be showing up on the SG&A line, or will it be some OPEX? Just how do we model this?
It will be showing up throughout. So as we've said, you should expect to see continued reduction in SG&A, but it's not all SG&A. I apologize, I can't give you more color on that.
And the Kent's 50 million synergies are in addition to this as well, or is this double counting any of that?
No, the Kent synergy is addition and will be embedded in that contribution year-end and in 2015.
And we feel very positive about the capturing the Kent synergies.
Okay. Obviously, today we are pretty confident that we'll deliver the $50 million we announced.
Got it. Okay, I'm going to count that as one question, if you'll allow me. Bob, when we look out at your services and packages backlog, so there's been major changes there with the addition of Kent's. How do we think about the, I guess I'm going to call it the old kind of targets that you had for services gross margin of, you know, 25% and 7 to 10 in packages. Are those still goals of the company given Kent's?
I think, and Lynn-Pierre, step on my foot if it needs to be stepped on, but we really have two different kinds of services. And so we're actually looking at if we should report this that way in the future. You've got field services, of which a fair bit of the Kent's activity is at that. And when we do mega projects like a brand new mine out in the middle of nowhere, those typically run at a lower margin in the mid to high teens. Consulting engineering typically runs at the level we've quoted or even higher. And so we do need to take a look at our blend rate for this, and if we keep it as a single reporting segment, we may have to make an adjustment. If we split it out, then you might have one going up and one going down.
Got it. Okay, I'll get back in the queue, guys. Thanks.
We'll now take our next question from the line of Anthony Zika at Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Bob, what are your current views on energy prices, and are there any changes in your prospects regarding Kent's?
Well, first of all, we're thrilled with Kent's, and I'd do it again in a heartbeat right now.
Mm-hmm.
No question about that. So it's the right strategy. So far, we've not seen, you know, it's early days. We haven't seen any impact from our customers so far. As we said before, one of the things we like about the Kent's approach is it's got many, many entries into the marketplace and a lot of access into OPEX and sustaining capital. So, you know, if we are going to have an effect of lower prices, and again, we haven't seen one and we're not expecting one in the near term, then we like Kent's better than a lot of alternatives under those circumstances. And we've seen the same thing in mining now, where you have still a healthy spend and plant debottlenecking and other on-site services, and less so in new build. And we're trying to use what we already do in that area and Kent's to do more of that in the mining sector as well. In terms of oil prices, you know, I used to do this for a business, and I'd say there'd be a lot of rich people if they could get that right. So it's difficult to forecast. What we have seen is with the oil clientele, CapEx is not directly correlated to oil prices. They have a long planning horizon. It takes sometimes a decade to develop these projects. And so usually, except in very special circumstances, I think in early 2009 was the only time I've seen an instant reaction to negative economic news. The rest of it tends to be flattened out quite a bit. So at this point in time, we are not pulling in our horns over oil prices. We're really excited about Kent's. And we also like the fact that Kent's is so useful in other verticals for us, so we're happy.
Okay. My second question is, what area of expertise or niches that SNC is missing today that would enhance further cross-selling opportunities, and is offshore energy one of these niches?
You want me to answer that specifically to the oil and gas market?
No, not necessarily. In general.
Okay. All right. So in oil and gas, we have said, you know, we're very strong upstream, but we would like to be stronger in offshore, for sure. That would be an area of interest. So, you know, I'm not adverse to expanding our oil and gas portfolio now, even in the face of this pricing news. when I've talked in general about what we would be looking for if we were to find additional partners, we are dominant in Canada and even to a large extent North America, even though we don't do much in the U.S., but we're so big in Canada, we're bigger than the North American competition in power and in transit. So we'd like to take that elsewhere. So we'd be looking for footprint in those markets elsewhere. We've said we like the margin and synergy opportunities in environment and water, so we'd be interested in that. We're interested in shoring up our Tier 1 mining position, and right now there's attractive valuations in that marketplace, so we see a lot of opportunities to build value, and we're quite pleased with the way the Kent's transaction has worked out so far.
Okay, thank you.
We'll now take our next question from the line of Sarah O'Brien at RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Can you comment on any impact the restructuring plan may have on backlog build or current bidding pipeline? Like how should we view revenues going forward post the restructuring?
Sarah, I think the answer would be we're not concerned about a reduction in gross margin. So we may drop some revenue, but it's not the kind of revenue we're particularly concerned about. It's not yielding much gross margin. What we did, we're not in the business of downsizing. That's kind of the least favorite thing that me or any of my people like to do. It's a hugely disruptive, obviously, for the affected people. We would like to do anything but do that. So we're take every measure we can to avoid that. We're only doing it in this case because we felt we had to preserve a Canadian national champion that's going to be a big, successful E&C company in the future. And so we looked at these chunks of our business, and they're either associated with overhead, so there's no revenue or GM impact at all, or where they aren't associated with overhead, we didn't see a sustainable, profitable solution. And we looked at every way we could to see if there was a way, and we couldn't come up with one.
Okay, and are we talking about sub-segments of groups? I'm just wondering how widespread this is through the organization, or is it kind of pockets that are mostly overseas that have nothing to do with the rest of the business?
I would call it more pocket than not, and I just reiterate, asking questions have seen our strategy. There's no change to the strategy whatsoever. We're still in the same verticals. We're still in the same basic geographies. These are niches or areas where there just isn't a going concern system put together.
Okay. That's helpful. Thanks. And then impact of the restructuring, how are your credit rating agencies looking at this? Does this cause any risk maybe to the credit investment grade credit rating and also just to the timing of the 407 sale?
Obviously we spoke with rating agency. We have not yet their feedback, but I can say that through the explanation we deliver, we receive a favorable comments from them. But let's say for the moment we have to wait the definitive position, and we have to wait the credit committee decide what they will decide. But let's say we consider that, as we already explained, the downsizing and restructuring is a very good positive. We have some very good news to announce, the substantial commission from CUSM, the CAN's contribution, the fact that our EMC net income is positive before restructuring and acquisition cost. So we are on a good path, and they appreciate that.
Okay, and the 407, is there any impact to the timing of the sale of that?
No, that's totally disconnected. The 407 is really all about the same issues we've talked about before, which is, are we ready? How do we feel about the market in general, which is good right now, so that's a positive. How do we feel about the buyer pool? Have we properly dealt with that? How do we feel about our position and alignment with our partners? That's moving along very well. So I think 407 in general is moving in quite a good direction right now. I wouldn't change my forecast of timing, but we're moving along well.
Okay, sorry, what was your forecast of timing for 407?
We have said the early side of midterm. So I'm trying to remember. I'll look at the last quarter call, and I'll say that again, whatever it was, Sarah. But it's the it's not long.
All right, we'll wait for that. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from the line of Bert Powell at BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Bert?
Please go ahead, Mr. Powell. Your line is open. We'll now take our next question from the line of Paul Lechem at CIBC. Please go ahead.
Well, thanks. Just a clarification, if I can, on the restructuring. As I read it, there's $200 million in cash charges and $100 million in non-cash charges. Is that correct?
Yeah. Lynn Pierre, go ahead.
Yep. Is it correct?
And most of that you expect to recognize in Q4?
Most of them will be recognized in Q4 for, let's say, the portion directly related to the restructuring plan, i.e. the cash portion. Okay. Non-cash is indicative. It's a maximum amount we envisage, and it will be decided over before the end of the year.
Yeah. Most of it will be in Q4.
Yep.
But not all.
Okay, thanks. Just going back to the question on the 407, if you do end up selling this, how should we think about the use of the proceeds at that point in time? Is it for another acquisition? Do you return the cash to shareholders? How do you think about that?
Well, the answer I've been giving, Paul, is that we remain flexible right up till the last moment. We feel our value add to investors is to be able to select and integrate good, profitable growth into the company. So that tends to be our default position, but whatever makes the most sense for value creation at the time is what we'll consider, and our investors are not shy about weighing in, and we listen to all of them very carefully as that time comes.
And how is your acquisition pipeline of opportunities at this point? Can you discuss anything, not specifics, but in terms of...
I think we feel good about the opportunities.
Okay. same kind of areas as Kent, or anything else you can say?
Pardon?
Same kind of end market as Kent's, or how should we think about
it? No, you know, what we look at is we're looking, again, to fulfill our strategy. So we would go back to the chart that we put up on our strategy and say, what do we need to fill in there that will add the most shareholder value over the long term in completing an arrangement? And so we're wide open across the whole spectrum. And it really depends on, you know, the mix of what we need versus what's available. And we're looking for growth and the solid opportunity to contribute growth over the long term, and we're not looking just for bulk. So Kent's was a clear statement where, you know, we could have, for the price we paid for Kent's, we could have bought twice as much revenue in a more infrastructure-oriented firm, but we saw that as a growth engine. And we're still confident that's the way it's going to work out. So that's why we did that.
Yeah, thanks, Bob.
We'll now take our next question from the line of Bert Powell at BMO. Please go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, Bert. Sorry about that, whatever happened.
I think it's my phone. I got dropped from this call twice. In any event... what I wanted to ask you, Bob, was just on your compliance front. You know, you've said you have the highest standard in the industry. And I'm just wondering how that is impacting how your customers are interfacing with you. You know, are they finding it more challenging to do business with you these days? I'm just trying to think about your comments where you talked about bid selectivity.
Yeah. Well, the bid selectivity comments were more directed at what we select rather than who selects us.
Okay.
So, you know, we're clearly in the market now. We are not pricing projects in desperation. We're pricing them for margin. And if somebody wants to lose a bunch of money, then I'll be happy to watch them lose it rather than us. So that's what we mean by bid selectivity. In terms of ethics and compliance, certainly if you said, Bob, you can have two worlds, one where none of the past ever happened and one where it did, I'd take the where it didn't happen. But on the other hand, the silver lining in that is it's given us the opportunity to really build a first-class system that enjoys broad employee support and buy-in, and that's very difficult to do in other companies. So we have an opportunity to do something special here. And that flows through to a lot of other things we're doing. So, you know, we have a terrific workforce, and I feel bad that we're having to take this action because they are such a terrific workforce. But in terms of the market impact of this, you know, it's not huge, but it's an irritant. It takes us more time. Certainly there may be things that we're not successful in because of it. We do have a core group of clients, though, who are quite concerned about this issue, who actually see it as a big positive because they say, you know, one CEO of a major oil company who's a client says, you're the safest supplier we have because no one else has been through their closets the way you have. And the other guys don't even know what they have, and you do. So we have, it works both ways, but we're hard at work on it, and I look forward to the day soon where I'll be able to say this is a clear competitive advantage.
Okay, thank you. And just the next question, your comments, you talked about being fairly upbeat on the infrastructure and construction side of the market, yet your outlook, you talk about, you know, the segments continue to be challenged. I'm just having a hard time reconciling those two.
Well, because it is a bit like standing on the fence between Death Valley and the Garden of Eden. You know, we've got a pile of bad bids that were done that we're working off on the downside of it. When you look out front, you know, Canada has an awesome infrastructure market. We're uniquely positioned in it. The projects are in our sweet spot, and there's billions of projects coming up. So, you know, Ian Edwards, our new head of construction, is from Asia. We selected him on purpose from a different part of the world because we want to grow that business internationally. But his initial observations is, wow, this is great. You rarely see a bid pipeline like this that we're so strong in. So we feel good about the future.
Okay, so does that comment just really relate to legacy contracts then?
Pardon?
Does your infrastructure segment continue to be challenged? Is that really just related to legacy contracts then?
Oh yeah. No, we don't see
okay.
market challenges.
Okay.
That's a robust market. It's one of the best. It's strictly working off the past.
Okay, perfect. Just want to make sure I got that straight. Thanks.
Yeah.
We'll now take our next question from the line of Michael Tupholm at TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Bob or Alain Pierre, the $100 million of after-tax annual operating efficiencies from the restructuring, how do we think about that ramping up? Is that similar to your suggestion that most of the costs are going to be incurred in Q4 and we'll see most of that $100 million fall into 2015?
Yeah, first, as the $100 is before tax. Second, obviously, the rationale of this downsizing and restructuring plan is to embed it quasi 100% of the expenses related to in Q4 2014 when we will announce the executions.
Right.
The savings will impact 2015, and the $100 million is a run rate impact. It's true that we may experiment, as we already said, a small portion of this restructuring plan in 2015, but it will be marginal.
Yeah. So the just Michael, a little bit of caution is we're racing the clock on 2014, and if we end up with some transactions not being able to be completed, then that will flip over and cancel some of that out in early 15. So that's why we said it's as Elaine Pierce said, it's a run rate. The start date for when you can clock that off has yet to be fully determined. So.
Okay, and just to be clear, it's $100 million after tax.
Mm-hmm. After tax,
right. Right, okay. You went 2 quarters with no unfavorable cost reforecasts before incurring some this quarter, and I'm just wondering how you feel about the challenging legacy projects, and particularly as we think about 2015, it looks like some got pushed out into 2015. How you're thinking about that?
Well, we've of course spent a lot of energy trying to identify and mitigate risk in that project pool. As I've said, it's hard to totally connect backlog and risk because these projects have warranty provisions, and so things can come up and cause trouble even when you think they're all put to bed. So we've done our very best, but we can't guarantee nothing in the future. We've been pleased this year that the amplitude and frequency of bad news has gone down considerably. The one project we had has a provision in it where the owner is entitled to order us to do work, and we have to go file a claim to collect it. And so, like many of these others, we took a reserve for that, which we don't intend to give up on. We intend to aggressively pursue payment, but we couldn't take it as income, so we had to take a reserve.
But just to be clear, you're not at all concerned about anything outside of that portion that falls into what you're calling challenging legacy backlog?
Well, in our business, you've always got risk, and so we manage all of these projects every day hard to make sure that doesn't happen. But we still are a big fixed-price constructor, even with the move towards more services, as we want to do, and that's going to be our plan, is to continue to build more services than construction, but we'll remain a big constructor, and when you're doing that work, you're always exposed to risk. You're hoping your portfolio is substantially profitable over time, and we're building all of our systems to yield that result, but I can't promise there will be no write-downs in that ever. So.
Right, fair enough. Okay, just lastly, you were asked earlier about your views on the oil and gas market and prospects there. So it sounds like you're very comfortable with the Kent's backlog. Maybe you could just address that if that's not the case. But I'm just wondering about some of the other areas, and there's a lot of commentary in the release about your concerns about slowdown in the mining area. Overall, how do you feel about your backlog? Do you feel there's any risk of deferral or cancellation in any of the areas that we need to think about?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with our backlog. I mean, to remind, we don't book backlog until we can take some sort of enforcement action to protect it. So there's no speculative backlog in our numbers. And, you know, we have a robust pipeline of projects that if we change our view, we could put in backlog that aren't in there now. They're parked waiting to go in. So I'm not worried about our backlog. And what's important is when you look at the oil and gas market, if you're a driller or if you're working on the drill pad, doing any work around there, you're the highest risk because that's the first thing that will get cut off. We have very little exposure to that phase of the project. We're more in the field development once somebody's already got significant capex in the ground and now they want to monetize it. Because if you got a well and you don't have the processing equipment or anything, well, it still costs you for the well and it's sitting there, but you're not making any money. So I don't want to sound sanguine. I'd rather have $100 oil than $80 oil, but we're not worried about our backlog at this point.
We'll now take our next question from Frédéric Bastien at Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just wondering, when you look at acquisition, who's mandated to find your next transaction? Do you have a team in place at S&C focusing on that? Is it the responsibility of each senior executive, or are you actually looking externally for help?
Yes to all of those. our first job is to run the company and recover it to the profitability targets that we've committed to. So that's, you know, we don't spend every waking hour on acquisitions. It's running the company is important. But we have a group that includes the three group presidents, and Len Pierre and Eric Ryan, our head of strategy, and myself that do that. And we have all the external help we need as well. So I feel very comfortable. And bearing in mind this group of people, you know, came from many corners of the earth and are our competitors. So we have quite an unusual view of the world from our platform. So we feel quite comfortable in our ability to identify opportunities.
And we have an M&A dedicated team for execution of the deal.
And they performed flawlessly in the so far in the Kent's transaction. You know, I might just remind people, you'd have a real challenge going into the UK market and finding a deal that was closed anywhere near as fast as we did, and then one that's fully integrated as fast as we were able to do this one.
Okay, thanks for that. The other question I have is relating to the Kent's operating income for the quarter. Do you have a figure for that, for what the company has actually generated for the 3 months and ended September? Or is it easy as straight lining the 5 weeks that they contributed?
I don't think we can provide that. And you know, well, I wouldn't run away from the five-week number. We just have to always add the health warning that 5 weeks does not a year make. But we're very pleased with the Kent's performance and feel it's indicative of what people might expect.
Okay, thanks for that.
We'll now take our next question from the line of Maxim Sitchev at Dundee Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Maxim.
Just a quick question. Sorry, I don't want to beat sort of a dead horse, but going back to the guidance, and so the expectation here is still that you should be able to generate positive core EPS, including Kent's, but excluding the restructuring. Is that what you're telegraphing right now?
Let's say, compared to the guidance, I remind the structuring of our guidance. When we issue the guidance, we explain that we'll be out of any acquisition impact, first point, which is quite important to have in mind. And after that, the second items, which would have been excluded by nature, is a restructuring plan we just announced yesterday. So, in fact, you consider our initial guidance minus the net of acquisition cost and contribution from CANS minus the impact of the restructuring cost we have to to consider.
Does that answer your question, Maston?
Yeah, no, because, I mean, I think, you know, it depends if you look right now at the consensus on how people are sort of backing into the Q4 numbers. But I think sort of any additional clarification would be much appreciated from that perspective.
I don't know if we can provide any more.
Well, the $2.15 that we gave as
this is Denny Jasmine talking now.
It's $2.15, excluding the reorganization and the CANS. So as you know, we're giving only console guidance. So the $2.15 is the guidance that you have to go with next time.
Right, I understand. But okay, so then has anything? Go ahead.
And then, as usual, you got based on your number and model, then you'll see what, you know, depending on what you put as an ICI and ENC, you'll find out if the ENC is going to be positive or negative.
Right. And then has anything changed in the legacy SNC business that would warrant any sort of dramatic change in terms of profitability for those parts of the business? I mean, I understand that you're doing restructuring, but I mean, ex-restructuring, has anything sort of incremental creeped up over the last couple of weeks, especially post-Investor Day, that would make you change the viewpoint in relation to the performance of the legacy SNC business?
No. You know, whatever you thought you were hearing in Investor Day is the same as it is today. I think what I was signaling in my talk is that clearly, between economic headwinds and other issues, we're seeing it take longer than we had hoped for to recover to the kind of margins that we'd like to see in the legacy business. But no setback, just a greater struggle to get to where we want to be.
Okay. And so those, again, on the legacy business, the gross margin telegraphing for services versus packages, do you believe that in 2015 is that even achievable to be able to generate positive core EPS in the legacy business?
We can't give 2015 hints at this point. Wish I could, but we definitely have the majority. You know, 80% of our legacy business are hitting the numbers that we'd like to hit.
Right.
We've just got to fix the other, and then we'll all be happy.
Okay, wonderful. And then just a couple of very brief ones. Mining actually, you know, well, at least based on our numbers, was pretty good. Is this the run rate, do you think, that is sustainable, or is there anything that really benefited this particular quarter?
You know, I'm not sure about this quarter limp here, but in general, mining this year has been running at a pretty stable rate in our view.
Yeah.
You know, we'd hope for an uptick, but as I've said, we're really not thinking of anything till late 2016 now. That's kind of our operating assumption. If it happens earlier, we're fully prepared to take advantage of it. But that's our operating view.
Okay. And on the power side, if it's possible to provide any color on the negative reforecast, was that a new project or was it a legacy project?
That was the usual suspect non-power project.
Okay, but legacy.
Yeah. So remember, we had when I first joined 2 years ago, we were being troubled by a project that the infrastructure group bid, but it happens to be scored in power. So it's really not the power business as we see it is doing just fine.
Okay. And any comments, I guess, in relation to sort of all the press articles in relation to the McGill Health University Center, how that might play out?
Stand by for tomorrow morning.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. That's it for us.
We will now take our final question from Benoit Poirier at Desjardins. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Just to come back on Ken's, Bob, I just want to be clear. It seems that the EBIT margin was close to 9%, which imply a stronger performance than expected. Just wondering if we should not make any read-through given it's only 5 weeks, or was there anything seasonal or non-sustainable here?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to provide much more color than I already have. So it's indicative, but 5 weeks does not make a year. So that's about all I can say. That's Kent's has been demonstrating good margins. Whether they can retain that is under question, but we're very bullish on the possibilities.
Okay. And just for the cost plus, it seems that Kent's was running at about 60% in the quarter, which is below the 78% you disclosed at the time of the announcement in June. I'm just wondering right now with the current market conditions whether we see a shift toward the less cost plus, and does it mean that there's also a different risk profile going forward?
Benoit, Denis, you're talking about the Kent's backlog, right?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what you got to note here is that the packager's backlog for Kent's is not all fixed price.
Yeah.
So about half of it is cost plus, so even if it's selling in packages.
Okay, so no big change since June in terms of cost plus exposure or mix?
No. Stability.
No, I mean, if the market did have actually an effect of the lower prices over a period of time, you might see more fixed price trade creep in, but that would be well into the future.
Okay, perfect. Okay, great. And just for the SG&A, it seems that it was tougher to reduce SG&A this quarter year over year, even and when you strip out the cans. It seems a reversal versus the last three quarters. So any thoughts here?
No, in fact, I remind you that Q3 2013 was the first quarter where we launched, so it was a massive cut in our G&A, which explained the difference you observe and the stability, the apparent stability. On top of that, we have to, let's say, reclass a certain number of, previously embedded in G&A operation in Q3 2013, which impacts the very low level you observe. At this moment, when we refer to the 9 months and we consider that the trend is always good, and considering what we intend to do through Argos and additional to the value up initiative already ongoing, will continue to decrease.
Okay, very good. And just on the LNG side, with respect to the recent announcement made by the government, I was just wondering if you could provide more color about your expectation about how it will play out in BC in the next few years.
Well, I mean, clearly the move made by BC increases the probability that things will happen there, which is good news for Canada and us. And so we're enthused about that. I might remind that Kent's LNG opportunities remain available to us through the Kent's model well into the implementation of the program. So because we work within the LNG facilities, building them for some of our competition who may be named as prime contractors on those projects. So they're big clients of ours, and we love them for it. So we're optimistic that we can capture some value from Canadian LNG.
Okay, very good. And just in terms of outlook, I understand it's challenging to provide numbers. The restructuring will provide some benefit. It's kind of a transitional year. But in terms of margins, what type of margin should you be targeting longer term, and what time frame it could be achievable? I know it's a tough one.
Yeah, I'm reluctant with all the moving parts of this right now to provide more color on that. We clearly believe we're capable of producing industry average and then upper quartile margins over time, and we're looking at that calendar now, and we'll have more to say later.
Okay. Thanks for the time.
Yeah.
Please proceed.
Thank you to all analysts and investors who joined us today. This concludes the portion of the conference with the analysts. I would now like to turn the conference over to Lilian Nguyen, Public Relations Manager, Global Corporate Communication, who has just joined us. By the way, sorry, Lili, that's taking 10 more minutes than I was supposed to. So it's all yours.
Thank you, Denis. As Denis mentioned at the beginning of this call, I'm with Eric Ryan, Executive Vice President, Marketing Strategy and External Relations. Before we open the line for questions with media, I want to remind online journalists that a press conference will be held tomorrow morning at the MUHC with Gaëtan Barrette, Minister of Health and Social Services, Normand Rinfret, Director General and Chief Executive Officer of MUHC, and SNC-Lavalin CEO's Bob Card. The press conference will give you the chance to ask your questions regarding the MUHC, as you are all invited to the event. So thank you for limiting your questions to the restructuration and right-sizing of our operations announcement made earlier today. Et bien sûr, vous pouvez aussi poser vos questions en français. We can now start the 30-minute question period.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you have signaled for a question prior to hearing these instructions on today's call, please repeat the process now by pressing star 1 again to ensure our equipment has captured your signal. Our first question comes from the line of Nick Ventrae at the Globe and Mail. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm not sure if this falls within your question parameters, but I just wanted to ask about any settlement negotiations that you might be in currently with the RCMP or authorities related to any bribery or fraud charges.
Well, we continue to enjoy constructive relationships with all of our counterparties, but I'm not able to go into any detail about what we might be discussing.
Okay, and are you thinking about a potential fine right now, and how are you thinking about that?
We're not thinking about it. You would be reading about it if we were thinking about it.
Okay, thanks.
We will now take our next question from the line of Ross Marowitz at the Canadian Press. Please go ahead.
First, can you tell me, what is the percentage of your workforce in Canada?
With CANTS right now, I think it's around 45%. 35? More people outside than that. Yeah, it's around 17,000, I believe. Yeah.
Sorry, total 17,000?
Yeah. 16
to 17.
Yeah. 16 to 17, Eric.
Okay. And you're cutting about 25% of the restructuring is in Canada, right?
Yes.
Can you be more specific of, is the majority in Montreal or, you know, where is it going to happen?
Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. No, I think we, I wouldn't go municipality by municipality because this is obviously looking forward at you know, how we will tackle this depending on how it actually executes itself. But I think you can be, you know, this is roughly 9% of your overall number. So when you look at it from a Canadian perspective and you look at it from a provincial perspective, you can safely bet that this is around 7 or 8, 9% per on average. So in Canada, we have about, as we said, 16,000 people. About 1,000 people are a quarter of the total 4,000 in Canada. And then I would spread this out roughly.
Yeah, we're nationwide. Yeah. You know, our Quebec and Ontario have roughly equal populations, big populations on the west in Alberta and Vancouver as well.
Okay, so it's not half in Montreal because that's where your headquarters is.
Yeah, we're not providing any specific breakdowns, but
okay. All right. And what you said that it's going to be done quickly, most by the year end. Can you give an idea of what percentage of the cuts will be done by year end?
Eric, I suspect in Canada it would be most
of it, yes.
Yeah.
Again, our intent here is to treat our employees the best way possible and to do this most respectful way. So, you know, to move as rapidly as possible is part of this.
Yeah, and let me be clear that, you know, our goal is to become a strong and successful Quebec and Canadian national champion, and to grow, not cut.
Yeah.
So this is a maybe ironic, but it's a growth move. We have a target to become a 15 billion plus or minus company in the near future, and that's going to generate Canadian jobs. The jobs we're talking about here are not in the right place and the right activities for that future company. That's why we're having to take this unpleasant action. And we, after careful consideration, we said, what do we need when we're at that scale? And there were places where there just wasn't a credible fit to support that growth plan.
And how long have you been studying this? How long has this been in the works?
Well, it was very carefully considered, obviously. So it was several months it took us to challenge each other to say, is there any way to get this done some other way?
And are you getting out of any specific operations in Canada or getting out of certain countries around the world?
There's no exits happening. It's all readjustments, and there's some downsizing, obviously, but we're not exiting anything.
Okay, and last thing is, I'm wondering if you're announcing something obviously tomorrow, but is it relating to that timing of the handover or relating to the cost issue for the MUHC?
It's a celebration of success.
Okay. Is there any update on the cost claim that you're making?
No. You know, we have a diplomatic and business-like relationship, and that's a separate issue.
Thank you.
We will now take our next question from the line of François Desjardins at Le Devoir. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Just a quick question. The Montreal Gazette reported in September that people in IT were being let go in Montreal. Are those layoffs part of the cuts that were announced this morning?
Eric,
No. I mean, those announcements that were made over the past many months are not part of this.
I don't think we announced this, did we?
No, it was an announcement here in the building, but it was early September, if I recall correctly, and that's not part of this.
Just a second quick question. How many employees do you have at the head office in Montreal?
5,000?
Yeah, it's a lot of people. When you think of head office, the head office is here. There's actually many offices in the region. So, and those are not only head office, you know, overhead jobs. They are covering mining, metallurgical, infrastructure, and so there are operations as well. So when you think of head office, you've got to think broadly through, you know, a dozen or so buildings, and you've got to think of basically all the activities that we have people working in Montreal.
Let me just also offer, you know, we're, as a new person here who's loving it, we're thrilled to be here. Fantastic people, great academic institutions, so we're bullish on Montreal. This has got, there's nothing here that's against Montreal in our plans.
Well, thank you.
We'll now take our next question from the line of Frédéric Tomesco at Bloomberg News. Please go ahead.
Hi there, gentlemen. A couple of questions. So you said the restructuring had been in the works for several months, yet you reconfirmed the EPS target at the Investor Day. I mean, why did you do that if you knew that there was a restructuring coming and that there were going to be charges?
We did not confirm any financials on the Investor Day. And bear in mind that until we...
Well, you reconfirmed the target, didn't you?
No, not to my recollection. Bearing in mind the timing and magnitude of this activity is flexible up until the time we decide to do it. So circumstances could have told us maybe this wasn't the right time or the right thing to do, and therefore we stick with what our earnings capability is until we decide to change the parameter.
That's interesting, because I thought there was a slide with the EPS targets, but anyway, be that as it may, the other question is regarding the challenging projects. So at the end of Q2, you said that you were going to recognize about 50% of the hospital project by the end of 2014, and today you're at 25%. So was there anything that happened there that led to that?
Yes, well, we're recognizing more. But we're saying on that slide, you're saying that 50% will be recognized between now and the end of the year. And now, after the end of December, is the same period. So we have recognized revenue between June and September. So the percentage is going down. So it's normal.
Okay. And what about the North Africa projects? Because you were targeting the end of 2014, and now it's mid-2015.
Yeah. So those, Len Pierre mentioned, so we have some residual work on those projects that's going to spill over into 2015 now. The key thing is that both of them are operating, and our goal is to get the warranty period established and to start ticking, because that's really our exposure. So even, as I said, when we're doing no work on those, there's still risk until we get through the entire process.
Fair enough. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from the line of Michel Munger at TVA. Please go ahead.
Hi. I have a couple of questions that I would like you guys to answer in French if possible, because we want to use that for television. I just want you to explain two things. The first is to really spell it out on how these cuts will make the company better and more efficient. And secondly, why you cannot provide a breakdown for the geographic aspect of these cuts.
OK. Donc, je vais parler en français. C'est Rick ici. Donc, pourquoi cet exercice-là ici, c'était vraiment un effort pour rendre la compagnie SNC-Lavalin un joueur de premier tiers mondial à travers les secteurs qui sont prometteurs. Donc, le travail qu'on a fait là, au cours des derniers temps, c'était vraiment de se questionner profondément, de réviser, de revoir, de confirmer notre stratégie, puis de bien établir que certains secteurs étaient en croissance tel qu'on l'avait prévu, puis d'autres peut-être un peu moins. Donc, c'était vraiment de recentrer, de refocaliser nos efforts, nos ressources, nos personnes, des secteurs ou des géographies avec une moins forte croissance ou plus de difficultés vers ceux qui sont les plus prometteurs. Donc, c'est vraiment un exercice et un effort pour renforcer puis consolider les efforts de la compagnie.
Donc, ça, et pour le breakdown?
Le breakdown, je pense que ce qui est important, quand on regarde, ça, on fait un effort là, d'à peu près 9% à travers. Quand on donne des chiffres là, par localité ou par région, éventuellement, quand on regarde qu'est-ce qu'on fait à la fin, c'est-à-dire quand on refocalise, il y a des gens qui vont bouger d'une place à l'autre, il y a des places où on va faire un petit peu plus, un petit peu moins. L'effort total va être celui qu'on a annoncé. La disposition géographique et facettaire peut varier parce que effectivement, il y a des gens qui ont des compétences transversales qui vont bouger d'une place à l'autre. On va peut-être ajuster le tir là, en cours de jeu, de match. Donc, ça serait une fausse précision que de donner des chiffres là, locaux ou régionaux.
Excellent. Donc, je parlais à Eric Ryan, c'est ça?
Oui, c'est ça.
Merci.
De rien.
There are no further questions. Please proceed.
Thank you, everyone, for being here. And we'll wish you a good night. If you have any questions for investor analysts, please don't hesitate to contact Denis Jasmin, and for media.
Media at snclavalin.com. So have a good rest of the day, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect your line. Have a great day.